Chapter 20. When Ariane arrived in Belshire, she ordered the carriage directly to the Queen's palace and found that she was expected. She reasoned that Baron Carver had arrived in Belshire before her. This comforted her, but she felt angry just the same, and she had a palm prepared to slap the beard right off his face. She hadn't quite composed the words she would say to express her displeasure, but she really needed preparation to castigate someone who really deserved it, even if it was a baron in disguise. A baron should know better than to cross a viscountess. Missa and a sleepy Elaine followed the baggage to their apartments, while a liveried servant guided Ariane to the Queen's private dining room, where she would take dinner. Ariane had a lot to ask, though she doubted many answers would be forthcoming. Baron Carver had arrived 2 days before her at best, and whomever the Queen had tasked with mining the ledgers for information would likely have progressed little. The double-arched doors opened before her, leading to a warm room trimmed with dark wood, plastered walls decorated with pictures of King Ostris and Queen Philippa in their younger years. Delicate trinkets of gold and silver lined a shelf that ran continuously around the walls, and the rich smell of roasted pork wafted in from the kitchen doors on the opposite side. A single arched window let in a late evening light that did little to add to the illumination of the candles on the table. "Her Grace will be here shortly," the servant said, bowing and then shutting the doors behind him. Ariane took a seat and noticed that provision had been made for four. "Perhaps Baron Carver and the Lord High Sheriff will be joining us." She supposed the slap could wait. She didn't want to shame him in front of others. He had, after all, defended her household. A frosty stare during dinner would suffice with a slap for dessert. She would forgive him quickly, though she hated feeling upset with him and hoped he would take her remonstrations in the spirit they were intended, though she didn't quite know what spirit that was. The servants swung the doors open and Ariane turned, rising to her feet. It was not Baron Carver or the Lord High Sheriff. A gorgeous copper-haired woman wearing a beautiful but low-cut dress strode into the room on the arm of a gangly, red-headed lord. Her hair had been curled to perfection, and it bounced up and down as she walked, delicate features coming alive as she laid her eyes on Lady Hightower. The man she recognised immediately as the Earl of Tarbor. He was tall, had a strong nose, and carried himself with a disdainful air. The woman she hadn't seen in some time, but the widow Emile Carver, was unmistakable.
"Lady Hightower," she said, inclining her head. "We met once before, remember? I am Widow Lady Carver, soon to be Lady Tarbor, however. How do you do?"
Ariane nearly lost her composure. The Queen was playing games again. How could she force her to eat a meal with such a beastly woman?
"I am well, thank you," Ariane replied, returning the courtesy. "Earl Tarbor, it is good to see you."
"Quite," he said tersely, before pulling a chair for his fiancée. Once finished, he joined them at the table, sitting with perfect, straight-backed posture. A younger woman, darkly complexioned and serious in demeanour, entered after everyone was seated and stood near the wall behind the Lady Carver.
"Just stand in the corner, Ori," Lady Carver commanded the young woman. "I will call for you if needed. That's my lady's maid," she confided to Ariane. "I bring her everywhere. Doesn't she do the most delightful curls?"
"They are exceptional," Ariane smiled, trying to catch Ori's eye. The young maid focused on nothing, staring out the window and ignoring the conversation, or at least appearing to do so.
"Did you know, Weston," the Lady Carver continued, "that my deceased husband killed Lord Caunton of Hightower? It was such a ghastly affair. I do apologise, Lady Hightower. Lord Carver, if one could call him a lord, was practically a wild animal. Now that he is dead, I hope that you and I can be good friends."
Ariane was taken aback.
"My late husband insulted your honour, and Lord Carver defended it. I'm surprised that you would fault him for what he did to rescue your reputation."
The opening doors provided some relief from the uncomfortable silence, as Queen Philippa, clearly in a hurry, strode in as fast as her aged bones would permit. All stood in deference.
"Enough," the Queen said. "Sit down. I apologise for being late. I had hoped to be here before you all arrived."
"I'm sure," Ariane thought. She wanted to see what I would do when I met Lady Carver.
"Is everything well, Your Grace?" Ariane asked. "As well as can be expected. I was at the Flame Cathedral passing a prayer into the eternal flame for one of my under-clerks who is in need. The cathedral seems to get farther and farther away every year, and those damnable steps are quite taxing."
Ariana's heart leapt into her throat. Surely she meant Baron Carver. Had something happened to him? Talking about the unfortunate events that might have brought him to harm could not be done comfortably, with the Earl Tarbor and Lady Carver nearby. The last thing she wanted was for news of the secret ledgers to start making rounds through court any earlier than it had to. Nor did she want Lady Carver to take any interest in her not-so-dead husband, however unlikely it might be that she would. At the same time, her pounding heart demanded answers.
"Are you quite well, Ariane?" the Queen asked, tone bordering on the mischievous. "You appear a little pale this evening."
"I am well," she replied. "It was a long journey from Hightower, and I am a little fatigued."
"Ha," Lady Carver said, "Hightower is a stone's throw from Belshire. Frostborn might as well be in Cretus. It took the Earl and me over a week to arrive, didn't it, Weston?"
"Yes. Damnably tedious."
If giant sloths could talk, Ariane imagined they would sound like Earl Tarbor, whose deep, slow voice barely conveyed any emotion.
"I hope the matter with your underclerk isn't a serious one," Ariane probed.
"If it weren't serious, I wouldn't have gone to the Eternal Flame itself," Philippa answered. "But enough about that. We aren't here to talk about my house staff, after all. Men get hurt all the time. It's in their nature."
Emile spoke up eagerly.
"You've the right of it, Your Grace, though Earl Tarbor has yet to succumb to any foolish accidents. Lord Carver was always injuring himself in the stupidest ways. A few days before he died, he ran afoul of a saber cat, of all things. I suppose it was fitting that he was killed by the trampling bison. What was it you said, Weston, that we should call him Lord Underhoof from now on?"
She giggled, and the edges of the Earl's lips turned up a fraction of an inch, indicating amusement.
"The appellation was yours, Lady Carver," he stated evenly.
Ariane, shocked at the woman's cavalier disrespect for a husband not even a year dead, chanced to look up to the lady's maid in the corner. Her eyes burned with displeasure, and she quickly wiped a tear from her cheek. The Queen sat, an impartial and unmoved observer, and Ariane really hoped the food arrived quickly. She needed to find Baron Carver, and she desperately wanted to get away from his wife. The Queen, subtly and frustratingly, had let her know that Davin was injured, and Ariane felt a silent terror building within her. Lord Carver should have listened to her.
"I was just telling Lady Hightower," Lady Carver continued, addressing Queen Philippa, "that she and I can be good friends now that Lord Carver is dead. The disgrace of those tragic events 4 years ago need no longer stand between us."
She reached out and patted Ariane's hand, and Ariane stifled a flinch. "She'd better not do that when I have a fork."
"Were you unhappy with Lord Carver?" Queen Philippa asked. "If I may be so bold, your statements seem to indicate that you were dissatisfied."
"He was much different as a courting man than he was as a married one," Lady Carver reported without hesitation. "He was always out of doors, always mingling with the commoners, always letting the servants do whatever they wanted. It's as if he despised his own nobility. Whenever he went to assemblies, he spent more time regarding the decorations than speaking with anyone. He never had the proper air of command or dignity as he ought. I, of course, discovered these defects too late. He is dead now, and thus the case is remedied. I am just sorry that he bereaved you, Lady Hightower. I should have seen what a wild thing he was."
Ariane chanced another glance at Ori in the corner. Lady Carver was lucky that the young lady didn't have a fork either. Something very wrong was at work here. The Queen nodded her head in understanding, throwing Ariane a knowing look.
"Oh dear, Weston," Lady Carver said, mirth revealing a set of perfect teeth. "You are eating dinner with three widows. What will the court think?"
His lips turned down a fraction of an inch. Displeasure.
"It is hardly of consequence, Emile."
She sobered.
"Just an observation, Weston. You told me just this morning that I needed to be more aware of my surroundings."
He stared forward silently, despite her attempts to elicit a response with playful looks. The food came shortly afterward, though Ariane had little appetite for anything. Worry for Baron Carver soured her stomach, and Lady Carver's blather soured her mood. She ate little and quickly.
"Queen Philippa," Ariane said, rising, "I must beg to be excused. I'm feeling a good deal more ill than before."
"I thought you might be," Queen Philippa grinned. "Go see my physician, Dr. Otis, in the infirmary. If you happen upon my underclerk, convey to him my best wishes, will you?"
"Of course." Ariane had a thought. "Lady Carver, I was wondering if I might borrow your lady's maid tomorrow morning to put some of those delightful curls into my hair. Would you mind?"
"But of course not," she obliged, face beaming. "I will send her first thing after she finishes with me."
"I thank you. Lady Carver, Earl Tarbor, Your Grace, good evening."
The Earl stood, as was proper, and Ariane left at a sickly pace, until the doors closed. Then she resumed a healthy one. The infirmary was down a floor and on the opposite side of the palace, and by the time she arrived she struggled for breath. A servant opened the doors for her. Once inside, the smells of salves and the soft murmur of voices greeted her. It almost felt like the Flame Cathedral. The infirmary was a tall, narrow room with high windows that came to a point at the top. 10 beds lined the wall all the way down, each bed separated from the others by gauzy cloth. A thin, older man with a monocle and a black vest rose from a chair behind a desk as she entered.
"How may I help you, lady?"
"Hightower, I'm looking for one David Harper. Are you Dr. Otis?"
He smirked.
"I am, and yes, we have one David Harper."
His voice dropped to a whisper.
"Thank the flame, there's only one. The man has a hard time doing what he's told."
Ariane nodded. "That is the very one I'm looking for. Has he been troublesome?"
"Well," Dr. Otis said, coming around the desk, "he keeps trying to escape to get paint or pieces of wood to carve. An odd fellow. Only the Queen's fiat keeps him here."
"This way."
The doctor led her down the row, removing his monocle to polish it. There, on the doctor's palm, was the mark of the eternal flame. Davin was in good hands. Only two other patients lay in the beds, Baron Carver's at the very end. A nurse was chastising him as they approached.
"I'm spending half my time sweeping up your mess, mister. Now put the knife away and let me replace those dressings."
Resigned assent followed. Ariane and the doctor turned the corner to find a shirtless Baron Carver sitting on the edge of his bed while the nurse peeled a soaked, bloody bandage away from his shoulder and pressed another into its place. Ariane gawked for a moment both at the muscular frame and the three white scars running down the middle of his chest. Another bandage encircled his thigh, his pant leg split up above the knee. He had been shot. Somehow they had found him.
"A Lady Hightower to see you, Mr. Harper,"
Dr. Otis announced. Ariane had no idea what to say as Baron Carver's surprised face regarded her. His wounds and obvious discomfort persuaded her not to slap him just yet. He needed to properly convalesce first. He appeared a bit pale and feverish, and compassion pushed aside her anger over his disobedience and her anxiety over the ledgers he had absconded with.
"Lady Hightower,"
he said, raising his arms as the nurse pulled his shirt back over his head. The nurse butted in before Ariane could say anything.
"You lay down, Mr. Harper," she ordered irritably, shoving him back. "It's nearly dark. No more carving. You lay back, tell the lady what she wants, and then go to sleep."
The nurse turned away from her patient, rolling her eyes as she left. The doctor left too, promising to bring her a chair. As soon as the nurse had cleared earshot, Baron Carver sat back up.
"The ledgers are safe, Lady Hightower,"
he assured her, voice low.
"To ashes with the ledgers. How are you?"
she inquired, voice more emotional than she intended. Did he really think she only cared about the ledgers?
"Dr. Otis says I am doing well," he replied.
Dr. Otis arrived with a chair.
"I said you would do well if you would rest properly, Mr. Harper, which you have failed to do with all your little excursions. I believe the nurse ordered you to lie down."
"It wouldn't be proper in front of the lady," Mr. Harper refused. Ariane sat.
"Mr. Harper, lay down. It will go a long way toward me forgiving you in other matters."
He acquiesced, and the doctor left. Ariane noticed that his bedside table was littered with shavings and the new carvings he had worked on. A sabre cat, very like Elaine's, sat next to an exquisite hoop bracelet of intricately carved vines painted to look nearly lifelike. A half-finished walking cane, fashioned to look like a snake, leaned against the wall. Without thinking, Ariane stood and retrieved the bracelet, seeing the paints that Baron Carver used to detail it on the floor under the table. Just as with the rosebud, it seemed like it was hers even though he had said nothing. She found Baron Carver watching her.
"This is for me, isn't it?"
she inquired, feeling a little foolish.
"So you can tell," Baron Carver said. "I wondered if they called to their owners, as the wood calls to me."
She moved the bracelet toward her wrist and a section of intertwined roots pulled apart, allowing her to slip it on easily. Once in place, the roots knotted together and the leaves along the vines expanded outward, tiny pink flowers blooming along the entire length. She smiled in wonderment and turned it over for several moments, admiring the craftsmanship and the delightful magic behind it. As with her rosebud, she could order the flowers and leaves to retract and expand at will. Baron Carver was a marvel. She sat back down.
"This is beautiful. I thank you, Mr. Harper. I think I have very nearly forgiven you now. I do confess, however, that I had a mind to slap your face to a nice boiled red for abandoning us at High Tower."
Baron Carver put his head back on his pillow, eyes closed.
"I thank you for your forgiveness, Lady Hightower. Moving the danger away from you and Miss Brighton was my only objective. I'm glad you are here safely. The sabercat is for Miss Brighton. I passed a stack of firewood and I saw it there. I had the oddest thought that the other sabercat might be lonely. It's a female. I apologize if that seems odd. It is odd to me."
"She will be delighted," Ariane said. "She named the other one Fangs. I will bring her down tomorrow so she can see you and you can give it to her then. Is there anything I can get for you? Some water, perhaps?"
"No, thank you," he replied. "The nurse is very dedicated to my water consumption. You do need to take the ledgers to the High Sheriff, however."
Ariane thought she could detect the barest hint of a self-congratulatory smile on his lips, the kind men always got when they thought they were being clever.
"Where are they?" she asked. "In your domicile? Or with Mr. Lambert?"
"They are in the false bottom of your trunks. I had Mr. Garvis put them there after I left."
Ariane's eyes shot wide.
"But I thought you had the ledgers."
"I had ledgers, just not the ones in question. Whoever shot me got the ledgers I had and is now discovering what your late husband's grandfather ate for meals and spent on parties 100 years ago.
Ariane laughed.
"Very clever, Mr. Harper. And very foolish to get yourself shot over 100-year-old ledgers. Are you well enough to relate the tale?"
He began with his preparations with Mr. Garvis and told her all. He was light on the details of the shooting, probably to spare her mortification, but Ariane had little difficulty filling in the blanks. Lord Carver was extraordinary, his manner an odd blend of rugged and refined, and was a far kinder man than she had imagined him to be. How he had ever loved the cruel Emile Ironhorn was beyond her, unless her beauty completely unhinged his brain and blinded him to her true nature. Near the end of his story, she could see he was flagging, the pauses in the narrative lengthening and his eyes closing more frequently and for longer periods.
"I will go now, Mr. Harper," she announced softly. "You take your rest, and I will visit you tomorrow. I thank you sincerely for everything you have done. I owe you a great deal."
"It was my pleasure to serve you," he said sleepily. "Don't worry, my lady. This will all be over soon, and you'll be free of danger and disobedient clerks."
She left him and headed for her apartments, a sudden feeling of loss washing over her. What would become of Baron Carver now that the affair with her estate was out of his hands? Was he to disappear inside of Mr. Lambert's office and do figures for the rest of his life? It seemed a waste to her. Perhaps the Queen would knight him after all, and he would be given some small estate. There were two vacant properties near High Tower that would suit a man like him perfectly. One was even close to the Elder Forest that he had so enjoyed visiting. She entered her rooms quietly so as not to disturb her sister, but found that Elaine had forced herself to stay awake to await her return. The blood-stained sabercat crouched next to her on the bed, standing sentry. Her little sister wasn't so little anymore, and from time to time the young woman in her displaced the girl. While her mother pushed for the woman, Ariane secretly hoped that the girl would remain a while longer. Elaine yawned and stretched to wake herself further.
"Did you see Mr. Harper, Ariane?" she asked.
"I did."
"And?"
"Why don't we talk about it in the morning, dear? You're about to faint,"
Ariane suggested, not wanting to upset her before bed. She would have none of it.
What is it, Ariane?
He has been shot twice, but he is well. He is recovering, and I will take you to see him tomorrow. Elaine gasped.
That is awful. Can I go see him now? I'll have Missa come dress me.
Ariane sat beside her and took her hand.
Not tonight.
He is sleeping now. I promise we will see him first thing after breakfast, she nodded, and picked up her saber cat.
You know, I think Fangs gets lonely during the day when I'm out. I think I'll ask Mr. Harper to carve a girl's saber cat for him to keep him company.
Goosebumps bloomed on Ariane's skin. Extraordinary man indeed.